Well, welcome. Glad everybody could be here for our Bible study this morning as we study the book of Proverbs. Some more wisdom from God. Here it is on the last day of the year. And we thank God we're still here. Still able to worship Him and study His Word. And this is such a great passage that we're studying in Proverbs 8. I don't know, are we allowed to have a favorite chapter? I mean, Proverbs is all good, but Proverbs, chapter 8, there's just something special about chapter 8 because it's all about the personification of wisdom and wisdom speaking directly to us. All right, so we are still on question number 14 in lesson 2, the benefits of wisdom and understanding of what does wisdom speak. We went down the list last week. There are 8 things listed. We left off at number 9, which is G, since they're listed by letters. So, 7. I said 7. So, because they're listed by letters. Yeah, I just kind of quickly looked at it and went, oh, 9. No, it's number 7 out of 8. So that's G, and Richard was kind enough to put a line across there so we can see that's where we left off. So, thank you for doing that.
Just put a pin in it.
It worked really well. So what I got, and what we talked about last week, of what does wisdom speak, we talked about noble things. Now, this is taken from 8, 6 through 9. I'll go ahead and read that. So Proverbs 8, I will go ahead and read beginning in verse 1, and I'll read down through 11 because that seems to be the paragraph's break. Does not wisdom call and understanding lift up her voice? On top of the heights beside the way where the paths meet, she takes her stand. Beside the gates at the opening to the city, at the entrance of the door, she cries out. To you, O man, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O naive ones, understand prudence, and O fools, understand wisdom. Listen, for I will speak noble things, and the opening of my lips will reveal right things, for my mouth will utter truth. And wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the utterances of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverted in them. They are all straightforward to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Take my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choicest gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things cannot compare with her. So, as we read through these passages, we're focused on 6 through 9 for the answers to number 14. So verses 6 through 9 have the answers to number 14. So A, I put noble things, and again, I'm reading for the New American Standard Translation. Whatever translation you've got might read a little bit differently, have a few different words that probably mean the same thing, but just in different words. I put noble things, I got right things for B. For C, I put truth. For D, I put wickedness is an abomination, or wickedness as an abomination. E is righteousness. Nothing crooked or perverted I've got for F, and we talked about that's where we left off last week, was nothing crooked or perverted. And so we're picking up at G, and again, since there's so many and there's different translations, you might have different words in different places on the A through H list here. But I've got understanding. And understanding I've got from, from number 9. They're straightforward to him who understands. This is what I've got. Verse 9 says they are all straightforward to him who understands. So I put understanding.
Mine says, all are plain to him that understands. So, how does yours lead off to get to the understanding?
And what does yours say?
Plain.
Plain. Oh, they are all plain. So, straightforward. Plain to him who understands. As a parallel, Proverbs 14, verse 6. Proverbs 14. Verse 6 says, a scoffer seeks wisdom and finds none, but knowledge is easy to one who has understanding. So, I mean, these are things that go hand in hand as we read through the wisdom literature. Knowledge, wisdom, understanding, discretion, they go hand in hand. As you grow in one, you grow in the others as well. So that's why, according to this, knowledge is easy to one who has understanding. If you understand the wisdom of God, when you read it, you learn from it. So, and it goes both ways. The more you grow in knowledge, the more you grow in wisdom, because that's where we find the wisdom of God is in His Word. So, anyway, I've also got Philippians 2:15. We jump over to the New Testament. We'll look at Philippians chapter 2, verse 15. Beginning in verse 14. Philippians 2, beginning in verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourself to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain or toil in vain. Proving ourselves to be blameless and innocent in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. That's where we are. And of course, when Paul wrote this to the church in Philippi, he was living in that world as well. So there's a lot of things that haven't changed. Crooked and perverse world. We were talking about that on our way to services this morning as we were watching people driving. Carolyn.
That makes me think of Daniel, too. They had to make up a law in order to find something that he had done wrong.
They wanted to accuse him.
So
yeah, so they had to make up a law that he could break, that they knew he was breaking already. Yeah. Crooked and perverse. So, but understanding is something that we gain. Wisdom speaks understanding. Any other comments about that? Or I'll go ahead and move on to H. And H, again, is hand in hand. Knowledge is what I put for H, for Proverbs. So back to Proverbs 8, verse 9. They are all straightforward to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. So of what does wisdom speak? I've got knowledge as the last thing there. Anyone else have something different? Or no? As a parallel, I've got Proverbs 18:15. So while we're in Proverbs, jump over to 18:15. Proverbs 18:15 says, "The mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge." The marginal reference I have there next to the word mind, it says, or heart. So the heart of the prudent acquires knowledge. The ear of the wise seeks knowledge. And if you can kind of understand why the translators, one translator says heart, the other one says your mind. Well, where's your heart? The Bible heart is up here. It's not the blood pump that's in your chest. When your heart is affected by something, that's your mind. So anyway, the mind of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. As I said, they all go hand in hand. As one grows, the other grow as well. The other aspects or characteristics or the things that we're going to grow from examining the wisdom of God are of what does wisdom speak. So that's what I've got for question number 14. Any other comments?
Wise thinking and an intelligent heart acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise knowledge.
Are you talking about Proverbs 18:15? 18:15? Yeah. It says the intelligent? Interesting. Yeah, the intelligent heart?
Intelligent heart acquires knowledge.
Huh. Yeah, says the same thing. Carolyn?
It seems like the theme of a lot of this is you get what you're looking for. If you're looking for wisdom, you're going to find wisdom in if you're a scoffer and a mocker, you're going to find nothing. And don't we see that?
Yeah. Down in verse 17 of Proverbs 8, back to Proverbs 8. We're not there yet. We're going to get there in the next two questions from now. I guess three questions from now. But verse 17, I love those who love me, and those who diligently seek me will find me. This is, again, the personification of wisdom. This is wisdom talking directly to us and saying, if you seek me, you will find me. Of course, God has told us that in a number of places as well, as far as, you know, God Almighty said the same thing. You seek me, you'll find me. It's a guarantee that those who seek after God will find him. If you're truly seeking, you'll find him. He guaranteed it. And that's the same thing here with wisdom. So, I mean, honestly, that's why we're studying this book. Because we all want to gain wisdom. And best place to gain it is what you know is in the book. In the wisdom literature. All right, so question 15. What is wisdom? Let me go ahead and move that on. What is wisdom more important than? I didn't write the questions. I would have worded it maybe a little different, but yeah, it's more important than a lot of things. But let's see what chapter 8, 10 and 11.
Silver.
Okay, silver's the first thing. That what? How many things are listed here? Four things. Okay. Latonya's already jumped ahead and given us two, but that's okay. Silver and gold and jewels.
Rubies.
I was going to say somebody's got rubies too. Is it whatever it says jewels? Somebody else has rubies. And then
all things that may be desired.
All things that may be desired.
And pretty much everything.
My version says all desirable things. So basically everything. Yeah, what is wisdom more important than? Everything. Yeah. There's kind of a parallel chapter to Proverbs 8, which we've visited several times, and that's over in Job. Look at Job 28. The thing about Job 28 is it defines wisdom in many ways. It tells you where it can be found and the value of it. But Job 28, look at beginning of verse 15. I'll read 15 through 18. Job 28, beginning in verse 15. Pure gold cannot be given in exchange for it. Now, it is wisdom. It's introduced there in verse 12. Where can wisdom be found? What is the place of understanding? In fact, I'll just keep reading. Verse 13. Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it is not in me. Pure gold cannot be given in exchange for it, nor can silver be weighed as its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Gold or glass cannot equal it, nor can it be exchanged for articles of fine gold. Coral and crystal are not to be mentioned, and the acquisition of wisdom is above that of pearls.
Rubies.
so many times the rubies are coming in. I've got to make an adjustment here. Hopefully that's not your eyes. Because I have to turn the page. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. Where then does wisdom come from? And where is the place of understanding? Thus it is hidden from the eyes of all the living and concealed from the birds of the sky. Abaddon and death say, with our ears we have heard a report of it. Wisdom. So that's what, I mean, you can read the whole chapter, and I think we did that before. But
verse 22 there, did you say what was the first word to that?
Abaddon.
Okay. What does yours say?
Destruction and death. So, but it's got Abaddon in the.
Yeah, my margin says destruction.
Yeah.
I.e. destruction. So. All right, so the answer is what is wisdom more important than? Everything. Look at Psalm 19 and beginning in verse 7. Psalm 19 and beginning in verse 7.
songs.
It's one of our songs.
Psalm what?
Psalm number 19, beginning at verse 7. Psalm 19, beginning in verse 7, the law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold. Yes, the much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. More desirable than gold. It's interesting to look at the wealth of Solomon in every way. You know, he was overwhelming with wisdom. Or overwhelming with the word I'm looking at, overflowing with wisdom and overflowing with wealth. He had all the gold any man could want. He had all the silver any man could want. And he had all the wisdom any man could want. He had it all. And he's the author of the book that we're reading. So it's interesting. But that's why he keeps making reference to gold, because he knows how valuable it is. I mean, to him, it probably wasn't all that valuable because he had so much of it. But he knew among, you know, people that he was with, people that he ruled over, how valuable gold was. And he was telling them over and over again, what's more valuable than the most valuable thing you can think of? Wisdom is more valuable than anything you can think of. So another parallel I've got there is Proverbs 3. So 3 and 8 kind of go hand in hand too. I mean, it's in the same book, but Proverbs chapter 3, get over there and look at verses 14 and 15. Proverbs 3, 14 and 15. For her profit is better than the profit of silver, and her gain better than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels. Does it say rubies?
Oh, yeah.
I've got a marginal reference that says, or coral. Corals.
Readiness of like a red color.
Oh.
And that's why there's
differences. Okay, so more precious than red jewels. And nothing you desire compares with her. I mean, it continues too. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are pleasant ways, and all her paths are peace. She's a tree of life to those who take hold of her, and happy are all who hold her fast. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth, and by understanding he established the heavens. We're going to get more into that in chapter 8 in the next couple of questions. But that's just how important is wisdom. It's more important than everything, all desirable things. I think that's the way it reads. Yours read a little bit different, Richard, but verse 11, I've got, for wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things cannot compare with her. And you've got,
all things that may be desired are not to be compared unto her.
All things that may be desired are not to be compared by her. So, well, we made it through 15 a lot faster than 14. Any comments about number 15? Number 16, what does the fear of the Lord hate? So we're still in chapter 8. I'm going to go ahead and read the next paragraph, really, 12 through 21. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance in the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. Power is mine. By me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles, all who judge rightly. I love those who love me, and those who diligently seek me will find me. Riches and honor are with me, enduring wealth and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, even pure gold, and my yield better than choicest silver. I walk in the way of righteousness, in the midst of the paths of justice, to endow those who love me with wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. All right, so 12 and 13, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, and the perverted mouth I hate. The answer is right there. What does the fear of the Lord hate? There's four things listed.
Evil.
Yeah? Evil would be one.
Pride.
Uh-huh. Pride.
Arrogance.
Are pride and arrogance the same thing, or is there a difference?
We have pride and arrogance.
Oh, yeah. The American standard says arrogancy.
Yeah.
I always thought Mickey was making a mistake when he said arrogancy, but then I found out that that's actually a word. The American standard. It's an antiquated word. In 1901, it was a word that people used a lot, apparently. But no, okay, arrogance, evil, pride, arrogance. What else? I grouped pride and arrogance together and put the next answer as the evil way, because it says pride and arrogance and the evil way. Well, there's evil and there's the evil way. You're rolling your eyes.
But you can hate evil from the heart, you can also hate the practice of evil.
I didn't write it.
It's such a difference between arrogance and pride. I mean, to me, arrogance is sort of like
then there should have been five.
there might have should have been five. I thought about that too. But whether you put evil and pride and arrogance, and what's the last one is in verse 13, the perverted mouth. And, I mean, it says, and the evil way. So I put the evil way in there too. So there's evil and there's the evil way.
And there's pride and arrogance.
And there's pride and there's arrogance. Exactly. So again, I didn't write the question.
Letter E.
But we are studying the same book. So we know that there are a few things that the fear of the Lord is to hate. And if you fear the Lord, you will hate these things. Because the Lord hates these things. Proverbs 6, beginning in verse 16. I think we quoted this last week as well, but I mean, it's worth looking at again because it's all the same book. Proverbs 6, 16 through 19 says, there are six things which the Lord hates. Yes, seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among brothers. I think of feet that run rapidly to evil as the evil way. That's what I think of the way. I mean, there's evil. Evil can exist in your thoughts, but the evil way is to go out and commit evil deeds. That's kind of the way I differentiated those. But haughty eyes, of course, that is pride. That's what he's talking about. People that have proud eyes. They look at others as if they're better than them.
With arrogance.
With arrogance.
Well, there's a difference between pride and arrogance.
There is.
Arrogance is the I'm better than you thought. But I can be pious, yeah.
Yeah.
But I can be prideful in the things that I've done to the extent that I consider myself, you might say, better than others. But it's a different way. I mean, it's not necessarily haughtiness. It's thinking of yourself before others.
It's bringing to mind a passage that I have marked, and I'll tell you when I get there.
Probably also about arrogance.
It very well might.
Yeah.
I found it. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. I found it, but you want to say something?
Oh, I was going to say the opposite of all of it is humility and obedience. You know,
it is. It is the opposite. Romans chapter 12, really beginning in verse 9. And what this is, it's like Paul's version of the Sermon on the Mount. You know, he's saying a lot of the same things that Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, but he begins in verse 9 and says, let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence. Fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope. Persevering in tribulation. Devoted to prayer. Contributing to the needs of the saints. Practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. And if he is thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. The verse 16 is the one that it brought to mind about not being haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. We can gain all the wisdom we can from the wisdom literature, but we shouldn't head down the road thinking, look how wise I am. Everybody should listen to me. I'm the new sage in your life. You should listen to the words coming out of my mouth. No, we all have the same source. And the source isn't me. I think that's what he's getting across here. And, you know, coming from Paul, Paul was inspired by the Holy Spirit. You know, people could listen to him with confidence that what he's saying is coming from God. Why? Because he could perform miracles. He could raise dead people from the grave. He could heal the sick. And, you know, he was doing these things as he was going around and performing miracles. People could believe what he said. But when he says, do not be haughty in mind, it would be easy for a guy like that to be haughty in mind. And so he's teaching himself as well as he's teaching us. Back to the question, evil, what does the fear of the Lord hate? Look at Proverbs 3, we're going back to Proverbs 3, 7. So many of these are parallel in the same book. 3:7 says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Look at Proverbs 16, verse 6. Proverbs 16, verse 6 says, by loving kindness and truth, iniquity is atoned for, and by the fear of the Lord, one keeps away from evil. So it's the fear of the Lord we're talking about. What does the fear of the Lord hate? Evil. Yes?
I'm going to say, just in the American Standard Version there in Proverbs 16:6, where it says, by loving kindness, what yours says.
By loving kindness and truth, iniquity is atoned for.
Right. So the American Standard says, by mercy.
By mercy. And truth.
Yeah, that's our truth.
Yeah, mercy and truth.
So, okay. Loving kindness and mercy.
Got to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I mean, mercy is not giving us the punishment we deserve. And that's because God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So I can see where the translators would put those two together. Loving kindness and mercy. Anything else on A for evil? LaTanya? Oh. See, scratching your forehead looks like you got your hand up. That's all right.
I want to say that mine was steadfast love and faithfulness.
Sixteen six. Yours has what?
By steadfast love and faithfulness.
That iniquity is atoned for?
Yes.
Ah, steadfast love. Mm-hmm. What version do you have?
Six. English
Standard. Mm. You got the ESV? That's what Jenny's got, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So for pride and arrogancy, or pride and arrogance is what I've got. I've got several parallels I want to look at. Jump over to 1 Samuel 2. I believe this is Hannah's prayer again. There's a lot of wisdom in that prayer. 1 Samuel 2. This is Hannah praying to God, and let's see, in verse 2 and 3, I'm going to start with verse 1. This is 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. And then Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies, because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one besides you. Nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so very proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed." The thing about pride and arrogance is the way to avoid pride and arrogance is understanding our place. And our place is, he's the creator, we're the creature, we're the created. God created us, and he created us in his image. So we have an eternal soul. But as far as being like him, that's a choice he's given us. He's given us free will. We can choose to be like him in wisdom and mercy and love and all the positive attributes that we have. I mean, there's so many attributes for us to be more like Christ each day. But you'll notice when you read the New Testament, well, the Gospels specifically, the person of Jesus was not pride, was not proud and arrogant. He was humble. He washed the feet of his disciples. He said, "Everybody have a seat." And he got a towel and washed their feet. You know, that's humility. And then what did he say? Treat each other this way. Do this to each other. This is, you know, he's a servant. He wants us to be servants. So pride and arrogance, when we find our place, then we realize that we need to be humble. Proverbs 16, 18 and 19. Back to Proverbs. Proverbs 16, 18 and 19. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It is better to be humble in spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. This is a well-quoted verse. I'm not sure if there's a version that says this, but I mean, as I grew up, I remember hearing my mom say, "Pride goes before a fall. Pride goes before a fall." That might just be a paraphrase of this, but pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling.
Mine says a haughty spirit before a fall.
Before a fall.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. A haughty spirit before a fall. But, you know, when I heard my mom say those words, it was usually because either me or my brother was exercising pride. and she was reprimanding us and letting us know that that's a good way to stumble. Good way to stumble is to think you're better than others and to get all full of yourself, as she used to say that too. Don't get all full of yourself. So, there's wisdom there. Proverbs 11. Look at Proverbs 11, verse 2. There's so much to be said in Scripture about humility and staying away from pride, but it seems to be a problem that's been around since the beginning. Since Cain, anyway. Right near the beginning. Proverbs 11, verse 2 says, "When pride comes, then comes dishonor. But with the humble is wisdom." When pride comes, then comes dishonor. But with the humble is wisdom. 18:12. Random spots all over the Proverbs. Proverbs 18, verse 12. "Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, but humility goes before honor." Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty, but humility goes before honor. Anybody else read vastly different than that, or is that pretty much the same? Okay. Take a look at Jeremiah 49, 16. I write that down. Yeah. Jeremiah 49.
What was the verse, 16?
Yeah, I wrote 16 down, but in context. It is, but I wanted to read it in context so we understand. Verse 14, this is Jeremiah talking. "I have heard a message from the Lord, and an envoy is sent among the nations, saying, 'Gather yourselves together and come against her, and rise up for battle. For behold, I have made you small among the nations, despised among men. As for the terror of you, the arrogance of your heart has deceived you. O you who live in the clefts of the rock, who occupy the height of the hill, though you make your nest as high as an eagle's, I will bring you down from there, declares the Lord.'" Now, when you're reading Isaiah and Jeremiah, there's so much language like this, because the Jews had turned against God in every way possible. They had brought idols into the temple, set them up and bowed down and worshipped idols inside the Lord's temple. I mean, how bad can you get? Well, yeah, worse than that. They were offering their children to the gods of Molech. I think there's a Moloch in there too. I remember seeing, because I went, wow, Bruce doesn't know about that. But yeah, the god Molech was the god of the Philistines or something. That they built this idol god made of iron, and it had hands outstretched like this, and they built a fire under that, and the hands got red hot, and they sacrificed their babies in there and let them scream until they died. And they thought that was offering, you know, worship to this idol god. That's how bad a god. But you read language like that through Isaiah and Jeremiah, where God just tells them, "You think you're really something, and you're nothing, because I'm going to come take care of you." Now, we know what happened. He raised up the Assyrians, and the Assyrians came and took the northern 10 tribes captive. And then he warned the southern 2 tribes, "If you worship idols, the same thing's going to happen to you." And guess what they did? They did exactly the same thing. And then God raised up the Babylonians, who took over the Assyrians and Judah and Benjamin, and destroyed the temple. So they got what is pointed out all the way through Isaiah and Jeremiah. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. And then it happened. So, but yeah, that's some really strong language when he says, "You make your nest as high as the eagles. I will bring you down from there." Yeah, you really think you're something special, but the arrogance of your heart has deceived you. And that's really what we're talking about here, is it's deceptive. If you really think you're something better than others, that you have deceived yourself. And that's what we're talking about. You know, what does the fear of the Lord hate? Pride and arrogance. Also, I've got Obadiah. I've got to read my own writing here. Hold on a second. I think it's Obadiah 1, 3, and 4. Obadiah is one that you'll flip by really fast if you're flipping the pages. There it is. It's like Jude. You don't have to say Jude 1. Obadiah is the same. Obadiah 1 is Obadiah. Verses 3 and 4. The arrogance of your heart has deceived you. You who live in the clefts of the rock, in the loftiness of your dwelling place, who say in your heart, who will bring me down to earth? Though you build high like the eagle, though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. Same thing. And again, Obadiah was another one of those prophets that's telling them, here's what's going to happen to you. You think you're really something special, and God's going to bring you down. So, we are to avoid that pride and arrogance. I got one more. Isaiah 13:11. Well, we can learn from these warnings. You know, if pride goes before destruction. Let's see. Isaiah 13:11. Thus I will punish the world for its evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will also put an end to the arrogance of the proud, and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. And of course, that condemnation continues on through the chapter, but I think that makes the point. God will punish the world for its evil, the wicked for their iniquity, and put an end to the arrogance of the proud, and abase the haughtiness of the ruthless. Does yours say something different than ruthless?
Haughtiness of the terrible.
Of the terrible. Yeah. Because I've got a...
Yeah, it's kind of archaic usage of the word terrible.
I've got a marginal reference next to the word ruthless that says, or tyrants. Or despots. Yes.
I looked up the word abased. I had kind of an idea of what it meant, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
To lower in rank, office, prestige, or esteem. And so, you know, later we read, don't sit in the high-ranking place at the banquet. Sit somewhere lower and let someone bring you up. It's kind of the same concept.
It is.
If you think you're really something, you're bound to be brought down.
Yeah. And that is the same thing that Jesus was talking about when you were invited to a dinner. You know, take the low spot and don't go sit next to the host. Because if you go sit next to the host, he might move you down. Yeah. And then you'll be humiliated in front of everyone. That's all I've got for pride and arrogance. Now, next to the evil way, because I told you I put for C the evil way because I thought that was something different than evil. The evil and the evil way. Take a look at 1 Kings chapter 13, 33. 1 Kings 13. And I remember... When after the division of the kingdom, we had Rehoboam was the king of the southern two tribes, and Jeroboam was the king of the northern two tribes. Jeroboam was the first
10 tribes,
the first of many bad kings. The northern 10 tribes never had a good king. They had bad ones beginning with Jeroboam, who. You could say he was worst, until Ahab anyway. He was really horrible. And that's what he's talking about here. After this event, this is verse 33. After this event, Jeroboam did not return from his evil way, but again he made priests of the high places from among all the peoples. Any who would, he ordained to be priests of the high places. This event became sin to the house of Jeroboam, even to blot it out and destroy it off the face of the earth. The evil way is what Jeroboam was. You know, he was setting the, what's the word I'm looking for? He was carving the trail that all the kings after him would follow. They would all, setting the precedent. They would all follow the same thing. And when he says he made priests of the high places, you know what the high places were? Mountaintops. They built altars on the mountaintops to worship their idol gods. Sometimes the idol gods were the stars in the sky. So you go up out of the city where there's no light, get up on a mountaintop where there's, and then at night you can see all the stars. And they were worshiping the stars. And they had built, of course, the Asherah. The Asherah were carved trees. They took a tree and they carved it in the shape of a naked woman. And they bowed down and worshiped it. And there were Asherah on these mountaintops as well because that's where the trees grow. So it says he made priests, it says, of all the people, any who would, he ordained. So, of course, priests of God had to be from the tribe of Levi. But priests of Jeroboam could be from anybody. Who wants to be the priest? You know, raise your hand if you want to be priest. Or raise your hand with money in it if you want to be priest. I don't know that he did that, but it wouldn't surprise me because he was corrupt through and through. Is that the second one?
Yes.
That's the second one. All right, I'm putting my marker at C. Number question 16, C.